Welcome back to Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney. This show is heard right here on WFAS AM 1230 every Thursday evening from 7 to 7:30 p.m. And this week we've got a very special guest, Mr. Steve Ahrens. Steve, welcome.
Thank you, Bernie. Pleasure to be here.
Our pleasure to have you, Steve. Steve, tell us what you do for a living.
Well, I work with a company called Northwestern Mutual Financial Network. I'm a CPA, and I help people with their financial planning and financial work for the future.
Have you always done this?
I've been doing it quite a while, yes.
And what got you into this field?
I always enjoyed planning, investments, and specifically what got me into the area of special needs is I have a daughter with special needs.
So that stimulated your interest in helping others?
Well, my daughter, who happens to be 13 years old, was 1 pound 9 ounces when she was born and has a whole host of special needs. And I started seeing that it was very difficult to deal with the many issues confronting my wife and myself regarding her. And I started to see that I could probably help people with some of these decisions going forward.
And so tell us about some of the things that you do to help people. What should somebody be concerned about if they've got a child with special needs?
Well, generally, the biggest concern with families with children with special needs is that there is so much uncertainty surrounding their situation. They're fighting every day with the school system. They're talking to different agencies regarding benefits that are available. They may have medical needs that need to be addressed on a regular basis. And, of course, there's the financial burden of current costs and also the concern about future costs. Where is all this money going to come from? So I work with these families in terms of trying to plan for the future.
And how do you help them assess what the cost is going to be? I mean, it must be overwhelming to care for a child with special needs, and especially if the parent's not around anymore.
Well, it is, and we really have to understand what current costs are, and then we have to speculate into the future what those future costs may be. Question is, how will that child end up? Will that child be a productive member of society? Will they earn a living? Will they live independently? Will they be in a group home? These are questions which most parents don't have the answer to. So what we do is we talk, we think, we speculate, and we try to plan responsibly for a variety of different situations.
So it must be tough on the parents because nobody's got a crystal ball, and you know every parent, I'm sure, is hopeful that their son or daughter will one day sort of be a productive member of society, but I guess you hope for the best and plan for the worst?
Exactly, and one of the things that I try to help parents with is planning realistically, not planning optimistically. We can always put things in place, be conservative, and if the child ends up doing better than originally planned, some of these things that we can do can provide benefits to the parents themselves or to other siblings.
Now, you mentioned, Steve, a special needs trust, and I'm sure our listeners are interested in learning more about that. What is a special needs trust, and why do people need them?
Supplemental needs trust is more commonly referred to as a receptacle set up that will allow parents or grandparents to put money into so that the monies inside this trust cannot be considered to negate the child from receiving any federal or state benefits. Many children are eligible for Social Security benefits, Medicare, Medicaid. A variety of benefits are available out there. But typically, if a child has assets, these benefits may be lost. So when a supplemental needs trust is set up and the assets are sheltered inside this trust, none of these benefit programs will be impaired.
So the assets in this supplemental needs trust, as you call it, are the assets of the parents?
Well, they're whatever assets are put into this trust.
So it could be a grandparent?
Could be anybody. Anybody who wants to give the children money, grandparents or friends or other family members typically like to give these children gifts of money. And that's probably the worst thing that they can do, because as this child begins to accumulate assets, these assets can absolutely be used to disqualify them from any future benefit program. So if a supplemental needs trust is set up and the assets are dropped into the trust, then there's never an issue whether or not the child has assets to be considered.
Now, do you have to be rich to have one of these supplemental needs trusts, or are these for middle-class people as well?
These can be used for anybody, and there are many different ways to fund them. So the answer is no, you don't have to be rich. You just have to put one of these together, and there's many different ways to fund them.
And if it's the type of trust that is funded with a child's own money, for example, if a child is a victim of a medical malpractice and comes into a settlement, then if the trust is created with those assets, it's called a special needs trust?
That is correct, yes.
Okay, now these trusts are not necessarily only for kids with physical disabilities, are they?
No, these trusts can be used for children who have mental disabilities, cognitive impairment. Today we see an awful lot of autism out there. And, of course, the question, well, the issue with autism is where does the child fit into this huge range, this huge spectrum of ability? And it's also changing all the time. A child, when they're very young, may be very limited, and when they get a little bit older, they may be less limited. So if there is a thought that there may be a desire later on to use benefit programs for whatever reason, because that child may not be able to provide for themselves, a supplemental needs trust would make a lot of sense.
So even for a child with, let's say, a learning disability or a developmental disability, he or she would also qualify for a supplemental needs trust.
Absolutely. It would make a lot of sense.
Okay. Now, Steve, you've been doing this a long time, and I know you have a lot of experience dealing with families who have children with special needs and families who do not have children with special needs. Do you find it more challenging if there are special needs issues?
Oh, absolutely, because there's so much more uncertainty with the special needs families. A typical family with no special needs plans for education funding, plans for retirement, and then may also do some estate planning, plan to leave some assets, whatever assets may be left, for the benefit of their children. But with a special needs situation, there is absolutely a desire and a need to leave monies behind for the benefit of this disabled child. These parents know that when they are gone, that they want to enhance the life of this disabled child.
So this is not something the parents ought to wait until later on. This is something they need to do right away.
Absolutely. And if you know anything about the way money compounds, the sooner you start, the greater the result. And when you have a very young child, of course, you're very busy trying to figure out what's going on. You're talking to the schools. You're talking to the medical practitioners. You're trying to come up with plans of care that will hopefully improve the overall situation for the child. But at that same time, probably the furthest thing from your mind is setting up a supplemental needs trust and funding that trust. But if you do take that step early on, what happens is the day that you are no longer here to oversee and to watch your child, you've developed a significant asset that can hopefully benefit that child no matter what their situation may be.
Now, you keep mentioning these different types of trusts and assets and financial planning and insurance. Is this something that people ought to work with one individual, or is it better if they work with a team of professionals?
We generally like to get the whole team involved, and the professionals in that team are, of course, we want to use an attorney, and I would always recommend attorneys such as yourself. And one of the things people don't realize is attorneys have a specific area of specialty, and the laws are very complex, so an attorney that specializes in special needs is absolutely essential. I would recommend that we get involved with any social workers who are involved with the children to try to learn a little bit about how the child is doing, a CPA, possibly a family financial planner, anybody who is really involved and has knowledge of how this child is doing or how they're likely to do going forward is somebody that we would want to get involved with the process.
This is Bernie Crooks, and we're speaking with Steve Ahrens from Northwestern Mutual about planning for children with special needs. We're heard every week right here on WFAS AM 1230 from 7 to 7:30, and we'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back to Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney. We're speaking with Steve Ahrens. And Steve, in planning for a child with disabilities, I know you can cross all the legal T's and dot all the I's, but I've read in the literature that one of the most crucial documents for parents to create is this letter of intent. Tell us about this and how that's helpful.
Well, a letter of intent is just a document which spells out in layman's terms what you want to happen for the child. It may say things like, my child's favorite television show is XYZ. These are my child's doctors. These are the medications that my child is on. My child likes to wear certain types of clothes, go on vacation. It just lays out all the things that you know about your child that somebody else might not know if you weren't here. Now, this is not a legal binding document, but it just helps if you're not here for whoever the next party will be who will take care of that child.
Must be a difficult thing for parents to think about and to do, and I guess they have to rely on financial advisors like you to walk them through the process.
It does require a lot of work, a lot of thinking. I'll meet with people many, many times before we actually put together a plan, because there's so much uncertainty and there's so many things to consider, and of course it's all very personal. So we try to really get to understand the families before we can put together a plan that makes sense. And different people have different thinking strategies in terms of what they want for their children.
Now, if you're working with young parents, I would imagine that many of them have not yet accumulated a significant estate. And when we start talking about supplemental needs trusts and the cost of care for a lifetime for a child with disabilities, I'm sure it's overwhelming. What strategies do you have or may you suggest to help them fund a supplemental needs trust?
Well, there are many different ways to fund it. Of course, hard assets can be used to fund these different trusts, hard assets such as stocks and bonds or cash and mutual funds. But, of course, that requires real dollars, real assets that have to be put into this. But generally, the best way to fund these different trusts is through the use of life insurance. And the reason for that is because life insurance creates a tremendous amount of leverage. A few dollars today can be leveraged up to a significant benefit if and when you ultimately die.
Now, okay, so you don't just get life insurance. You have to apply for it. Tell me about the application process and how that works. Do you have to be in good health? How does that work?
Well, you have to be alive. That's the first thing.
Okay.
It helps to be in better health. That's why we always try to encourage younger families to start the life insurance process, because they've got a better chance of being in better health when they're younger. But typically they have to be examined by a doctor or a paramedical examiner, and they're going to come and they're going to take a little blood and ask about their medical history and check what medications they're on. And then an application is completed, and the information is then sent to the insurance company, who looks at all kinds of factors based on your history and then makes an offer at any type of varying different rates depending on how your health ultimately is.
And then if the person's approved and they so desire, they purchase the policy.
Exactly.
And would it be best for the husband or the wife to own the policy, or some other vehicle? Would that be more tax efficient?
It really just depends on the situation. It may depend on the size of their estate. So many people set up life insurance policies outside their estate. Currently, there is an estate tax. So if you have a estate in excess of $3 million and you and your spouse were to die, that estate would be taxed at 50% of the excess over $3 million. So if you had an estate that size, it might make sense for a trust to actually own the life insurance policy. So there's many ways to structure these policies.
Now, $3 million may sound like a lot of money, but if you've got a child with special needs, I was meeting with a couple just a few weeks ago, and they were telling me that the annual cost of care for their child, for education and all the different therapies he was getting, was north of $80,000. And the child had a life expectancy of greater than 50 years, so you multiply 80,000 by 50, and all of a sudden they needed to come up with $4 million. And the only way that, you know, we could think of to do that would be if they purchased life insurance, because they didn't have the $4 million in the bank. And when they started talking about life insurance, they met with somebody, and there were all different choices and options. Give us a pointer on some of the different types of insurance. I've heard of term insurance, whole life. What's going on there?
Well, as you say, there are many different types of insurance, and one of the things I do is after I sit and work with the family and understand their situation, I would generally come in with a recommendation in terms of what type of plan will ultimately work best for them. But just to give you a brief overview, of course, the least expensive type of insurance is term insurance, and term lasts for a term of time, and that time can be 10 years, 20 years, or 30 years. The premium is generally very low, but the benefit is generally very high. For example, $1 million on a 35-year-old could cost $1,000 a year, and that policy might be a 20-year policy. So that would mean at any time over the next 20 years, if that individual were to die, their heirs would get $1 million, and the premium for that would be $1,000 a year. Now, the problem with term insurance is that it is temporary. It lasts for a term of time. And at the end of that time, this 35-year-old would be 55, and at that point, he would be too old to purchase term insurance, or his health could possibly be bad, so he might not even be eligible from a health standpoint. Generally, these families that we work with have a permanent problem, not a temporary problem. Term insurance is generally used to solve a temporary problem. Other types of insurance are whole life insurance, which, as the name says, lasts your whole life. The insurance company guarantees that if you pay this premium, they will in fact pay a death benefit no matter when you die. If you die at 50, 60, 80, 100, or 120, that death benefit will be paid. Whole life also accumulates cash in it. So if you don't ultimately need that insurance, you can use the cash in that policy for a variety of purposes, for anything you want, education, retirement. There are other types of insurance, universal insurance, which is a very flexible type of plan, variable, where you invest the money yourself. You don't let the insurance company invest it. And then we have policies that are on single life versus multi-life. A lot of families with these children use what's called a second-to-die policy, which means both the husband and the wife have to die for the death benefit to pay. Many families feel that the ultimate concern is when they are both gone. So if they purchase a second-to-die policy, the cost of the insurance is significantly less than on a single-to-die policy. So there's many policies, many plans, and it, to be honest with you, is quite confusing and complicated.
I agree. Let's just recap for a second. Term insurance is like, if I was going to use an analogy, if I was renting a house instead of buying it.
Exactly.
That'd be like term. And the risk with term is that it stops. You can't buy term for the rest of your life.
Once you get to a certain age, and the age varies depending on the company, but generally speaking, term insurance can only be purchased up through age 55 or 60. Beyond that, no insurance companies make it available.
So,
and actually, this is another interesting number for you, Bernie. Only 3% of all term insurance actually pays. 97% of it falls away worthless. So it's a great deal for the insurance company. They've collected all that money, and generally they're not paying the claims.
And I guess the theory is most people live past 55, so they pay these premiums all these years, and then they walk away,
right,
and have no
equity. No insurance. I get calls many a day from a 75 or 80 year old who still has an insurance need and wants to buy insurance, but it's too late. They're too old.
Okay, so the right answer for many clients is to purchase more permanent insurance, which they can continue to have for the rest of their life.
Correct.
And that's the so-called whole life insurance.
Well, there's a variety of whole life type of plans, but it would be whole life, universal life, variable life. Those are all permanent insurance plans.
And on these plans, you can't get dropped at any age as long as you continue to pay the premiums.
You can't get dropped, but some of these plans need to be managed. For example, a variable policy needs to be managed. Some people feel that they can manage their money better than an insurance company, so they might purchase a variable policy. And as long as the policy performs well, the cash inside of it grows at a reasonable rate, the policy will continue to last. But the key to all of this is working with an insurance advisor who sits with these people on an annual basis and reviews the program to make sure that everything that they think they have is what they actually have, and the insurance is going to do for them what they need it to do for them.
As opposed to just getting some quote on the internet.
Exactly.
Wow.
And it's amazing to me because I sit with many families and they think they have one thing, and when I review it, they're shocked to find out that they have something else entirely.
So that's a service you would provide.
Exactly.
This is certainly an interesting and confusing area. This is Bernie Crooks. We're speaking with Mr. Steve Ahrens about life insurance and planning for families with children with special needs. And we'll be right back after this short message. Welcome back to WFAS AM 1230. This is your host, Bernie Crooks, with our very special guest, Steve Ahrens. And Steve, we've been discussing insurance. I know there's a lot to talk about. What other types of insurance products and needs are there?
Well, a couple of other insurances that are very important, which are typically neglected, are first of all, disability insurance. Imagine that you've got a job and all of a sudden you no longer have the ability to earn income. So now there is no income coming in and you still have this disabled child that needs to be supported. It would absolutely be the worst thing that could possibly happen to you. Disability insurance will protect your income in the event that you become disabled. Very important, typically overlooked by many families. Another type of insurance that is critical is long-term care insurance. People are living longer and longer, and there is a good chance that you may end up needing care as you get older. You may end up in a nursing home. If you have assets, the nursing home is going to require you to pay for your care. Long-term care insurance will protect your assets from the cost of the nursing home. So we highly recommend those other insurances.
So how do you tie it all together? I mean, what's the process like? Somebody calls you up, and then what do you have, a meeting?
Generally, what I'll do is I'll meet the family either at their home or in my office, although I like to go to their homes because I also like to meet the child to feel a little bit more closely attached and understand their situation. We talk a lot about the child, what his current situation is, what is the cost of that. We speculate a little bit about what the future cost of care might be. We talk about the dreams that the family may have for the child. Then I talk a little bit about the family's financial situation. I learn about their assets, what their income earning potential is. Based on all this information, I generally think about their situation, prepare recommendations for them, come back, and this may take two or three meetings before we can actually develop a plan that everybody agrees makes a lot of sense.
So you don't have a prepackaged plan that one size fits all?
Unfortunately, one size doesn't fit all, and everybody's situation is very, very different, and this is a slow, painstaking process. And also, once in place, it's very important that someone like myself meet with this family at least once a year to review exactly how things are progressing.
So let's talk a little bit about that, because I think that's an often overlooked service. Many people in the industry will sell the product and then you never hear from them again.
That's true.
And just recently, it's my understanding that the cost of insurance has come down, so it's actually beneficial for some clients to swap into different policies?
Yes. Well, one of the things that most people don't realize, they buy a policy and they bought it when they were younger, and they just assume that because they bought it when they were younger that the policy is still a good policy to hold on to. But recently we've had a change in mortality costs and the price of insurance has gone down. So generally speaking, if somebody has an insurance policy that's 5 years or older and they're still in good health, that policy can be replaced at a lower cost for an extended period of time. And this is one of the things that should be looked at on a regular basis. In these permanent policies, different companies are paying different rates of return. Today I got a call from an 83-year-old, and he told me he had a policy with a company, and when he bought it, he thought it was a terrific company, and at that time it was, but this company is only paying 4%. Other companies may pay as much as 7.5%. So there's a big difference from company to company. Everything is different, just like the stock market. Not all stocks are the same. Not all insurance companies are the same.
So you sit down with these families, you recommend a plan, and it comes down to, okay, it's going to cost X dollars to get you where you want to be. What do you say when the family says, wow, that's a lot of money?
What we say to them is, let's review again what our expectations are. Let's try to modify what our thinking is going forward. Let's look at some of the other options that may be less expensive, such as term insurance, and try to do the best we can to come up with a realistic plan that will satisfy the objectives at some basis, some level, and be able to fit within a family's ability to fund it.
This is Bernie Crooks. We're talking with Steve Ahrens, and right after this very short message, we'll be back to wrap it up. Welcome back. This is Bernie Crooks, and we're speaking with Steve Ahrens. And Steve, I assume that you don't spend your entire life going through this painstaking process of selling insurance. Tell us about some of your charitable activities.
You're right. Even though I love this business and I love helping families, believe me, there's nothing more fulfilling than making a difference in people's lives. And this is a very exciting area to work in. I'm also very involved in charitable organizations. In Connecticut, I am chairman of the board of the JCCS, which is the Jewish Community Center and the Jewish Federation for Eastern Fairfield County. So I spend a lot of my time fundraising and running a very significant organization up there.
And you regularly work with families in Westchester County?
I work with people in New York as well as people in Connecticut, exactly.
And how can people get in touch with you?
Well, my office is in Fairfield, Connecticut, only a half hour away from Westchester. I know Connecticut seems like a far-off land, but it really isn't. My phone number is 203-256-2162. Or I can be reached by email at stephen.ahrens at nmfn. And that's Stephen, S-T-E-P-H-E-N dot E-H-R-E-N-S at nmfn.com.
And if any of our listeners are interested in meeting with you, is there a charge for the initial meeting to review their policies?
There is absolutely no charge and no obligation. I'm happy to come and to sit with them and to work with them and see if I can help them out.
Yes, and I can attest to the fact that Steve really knows his business. I've been working with Steve for many, many years. He cares about people, does a great job, and doesn't leave you hanging. Steve will be there for you year after year. Steve, I want to thank you for appearing on the show.
Bernie, thank you for having me.
It's our pleasure. This is Bernie Crooks, host of Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney, heard right here on WFAS AM 1230. We'll see you next week. Good night.
Good night. Thanks, Bernie.